I need to check. Have I flicked the right switch? I have. Happy days. It is lovely to be with you all this morning. I kind of feel it's a wee bit like a second home, to be honest. You know, I know so many of you, and you've all been so supportive of Love for Life over the years. So it is just amazing to be here today. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Judith Cairns, Chief Executive of Love for Life. And Desi and myself and our family of Matthew, who's 17, and Beth, who's 14, we attend Lisburn Cathedral. So we're not too far away from here. And it is just great to be with you this morning. I wonder how many of you look back at the stories you heard as a child with fond memories. You remember there may be one or two that stick out particularly. You know those bedtime stories that you wanted read over and over and over again. Well, this morning I want us to think about a childhood story. Hans Christian Andersen wrote some brilliant pieces, didn't he? There's just some famous stories that we hear time and time again in many contexts. The likes of The Ugly Duckling, The Princess and the Pea. But this morning I want us to think, perhaps strangely, about the emperor and his new clothes. Do you remember that story? Yes, good. We have in this story an emperor who is just so full of self-importance. He totally loves himself. He wants everybody's attention. He thinks he is the best. He wants all to admire him. And in this story, we've got a couple of thieves who decide that they are going to sort him out. They have proposed that they will make him the finest outfit anyone has ever seen. They would weave him the best garment out of the best materials, and it was going to make him so beautiful and so admired. The one catch, do you remember, in the outfit that he was going to be made, was that to anyone who was stupid, the outfit would appear invisible. So anyone who was stupid wouldn't be able to see the outfit. And so the weaving began. They worked tirelessly to make the most beautiful outfit anyone had ever seen. When it was ready, the emperor goes in, he tries on his new outfit, and of course could see nothing. But oh no, he had to twist and turn, didn't he? Oh, it's so lovely, because he did not want to appear stupid. Then came the time to take it to the streets, to parade through the town and to show everybody his new outfit. For the purposes of decency, we have given him underpants in this story this morning. It wasn't until a moment as he paraded through the crowds, everybody's oohing and aahing, because of course they didn't want to appear stupid, a child speaks out. The emperor's not wearing any clothes. And at that point, everybody felt that they could say too. And I want to turn to another story that perhaps we remember as a child. And it's the story of Noah as he builds the ark. Perhaps quite a quantum leap, but go with me here. The story is found in Genesis chapter 5 to chapter 10. It's the story of Noah building the ark. Do you know, things are not good. In a few short chapters of Genesis, we have jumped forward 1,600 years. God had decided enough was enough. We read in chapter 6, verse 5, the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. He said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race that I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. Then we read in verse 8, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. And so God gave Noah a set of instructions. He asked Noah to build an ark in a really specific way. It wasn't just any ark. He asked him to build an ark of cypress wood with rooms coated with pitch both inside and out. He gave him the measurements. It was to be 300 cubits long, which apparently is huge, 500 wide and 30 high. A massive, massive boat. Then he was to bring two kinds of every animal and every creature, of every kind of food that was to be eaten, and he was to store it away for themselves and for the animals. That's a pretty mean feat. And I think sometimes when we look back at children's stories or stories that we've read as a child, we know the story, yeah? But I want us to get ourselves into this one this morning and just think, imagine how ridiculous that was at the time. Imagine how crazy that must have felt. Imagine the effort and the work that was involved. I mean, we know what goes into planning messy harvests and sweet 16 birthday parties. Never mind a boat, every animal, and food for them all. That is quite the catering project. Never mind how long it might have taken and what people might have thought of Noah as he went about this project. I want us to think about that this morning. This is quite an ask, and this is quite a task. But Noah did everything, just as God had commanded him. So what do these two stories have in common? Where are we going with it? Why do I bring these two random stories this morning as we come to talk about the work of Love for Life? Well, I want to suggest that in one story, there was a man that was absolutely deluded. Would you agree? In the other story, we have a man who could have appeared absolutely deluded. I wonder where we are today. Are we deluded? Do we appear deluded? You see, I think culture is doing an absolutely fabulous job. Absolutely incredible. Do you know, culture is weaving the most beautiful story of all time. It's pulling the wool right over a lot of our eyes. It's telling a great story. It's the narrative of freedom. Freedom to do and be whatever you want and to do whatever you want. No problem. You are free. Did you know that? It's also saying, do you know, you deserve to be happy at all costs. Happiness is the key. And I wonder, as we reflect on what's going on around culture today, have we actually started to believe the clothes? Have we actually started to believe the picture that is being woven today? Or do we see it for what it really is? This fabric is beautiful. It is made from fine silk. You can be free and you can be happy. As you heard in that wonderful video, Love for Life's vision is that we want to inspire choice and we want to transform this culture so that everyone, every person, every young person values themselves, relationships and sex. Do you know, I'd love everyone to value themselves, relationships and sex. We want to change the cultural message, the cultural narrative. It is a huge task in this day. Many of you are already aware, but we deliver relationships and sexuality education across our schools. Last year, we worked with 63% of our post-primary schools and 39% of our primary schools. A total of 37,344 young people received a programme in our schools. Some of you will have received those programmes in this last year or so. It is an incredible opportunity, incredible privilege, incredible honour to step forward and show young people the cultural messages and allow them to see it, see them for what they are. Do you know, many of us and many of our young people, many of us are falling for the messages that society is feeding us today. If it feels good, it must be good. If you want it, or him, or her, you can have it. Or him or her. Do you know, as long as no one is getting hurt, what's the harm? Do you know, our surveys show that young people are under incredible pressure. 13% of our 15-year-olds are sexually active. And for those of you in school, when we ask our young people, they actually think by the talk and all that's going on, it's actually much higher than that. There is huge pressure on our young people. There's huge pressure, as you all know, on what is going on in school today. 1 in 7 of our 15-year-olds are sexually active. Culture has done a great job of making them and us think, everybody's having sex, why shouldn't you? You're missing out if you aren't. The issue of online pornography, we've shared some of this before, but we need to keep reminding ourselves, the issue of online pornography is huge. 37% of all of our 15-year-olds have accessed online pornography at some stage or another. These figures are based on 5,000 15-year-olds last year in Northern Ireland schools. When we consider just the males, while it is not just a male issue, 30% of our 15-year-old boys are accessing pornography every week, with an additional 26% every day. This is huge. And I share this because there is pressure here, and I want church to be a place where people can come to and say help. That if someone is sitting here today, and that's you, whatever the age, I want this to be a place where we can say help. Because this is not the picture that we want to be weaving for ourselves, for each other, and for our relationships. The issue of porn is huge. On one website, in 1 year, they celebrated the fact that there were 6,300 centuries worth of time watched. 6,300 centuries worth of time watched online on one website in 1 year. We need to say something about this. We need to do something about this. This is not good. We need to say it as it is. How has the church responded to this? Silence? Well, what's the harm? Sure, no one's getting hurt. How have we responded? I read a great book. I have all these books that kind of need covers on them when you're going anywhere in a public place, you know? It's like, oh boy, here she goes again. And the kids get in the back of the car, oh, it's mum's book. Anyway, this is a brilliant book, Rethinking Sexuality, Dr. Julie Slattery. And her whole premise in this book is that culture has been discipling us sexually. Do you know, at church, whenever somebody becomes a Christian, we do a reasonable job at bringing them in, welcoming them in, getting them into a pattern of Bible reading notes, prayer, of worship, and getting alongside one another. And her challenge is that culture has done the job of discipling us sexually. So we don't really talk about this stuff in church. We don't really wrestle with what's going on. Do we know what we believe? So in the knowing what we believe, living it out and passing it on, the discipleship model, do we know what we believe as Christians about what God teaches about relationships and sex? Or is it purely a don't have sex until you're married conversation, if even? Are we living it well? And if we're struggling with areas, are we bringing those out into the open to be challenged and accountable and supported through that? And are we passing on what we believe? Or do we feel totally cringeworthy and awkward at any mention of relationships and sex? What are we doing? This book was brilliant at just sharpening some of our thinking around what we want to be doing and how we want to be living. We want to encourage openness and accountability in our lives, and we want people to be sharing. We want to know with confidence what we believe as Christians. We want to encourage Christians to know what we believe. We want to live it well, and then we want to pass it on. And that's part of what we're doing today. Because as we look around us today in society, sex is everywhere. Everybody can be talking about it, and on the one hand it's everything, but on the other hand it's nothing at all. It's valueless. Sure, why wouldn't you have it? It's totally valueless in the wrong setting. Everyone is talking about it, but are we talking about it enough in church? There's no doubt that this subject can be controversial, it can be painful, at times it can be awkward and it can leave us feel a wee bit vulnerable. But quite often we ignore it and we avoid the subject. And to say nothing is to say something. It might say that God has nothing to say on the matter. It might say that your pain doesn't matter here. It might say that your problem is too big for God to handle. And while I totally believe that sex is private and is personal, what is going on today in society is of huge public concern. And so we need to talk, not only in church, but with wider society. Because the silence teaches us to hold on to struggles and to hold on to shame. I'd love this to be a place where that changed. So wider culture has indeed presented a compelling vision, a compelling moral vision of authenticity and freedom. And perhaps we as Christians have responded with facts and with rules. We can't respond to a compelling story, a compelling vision, with facts and rules. Do you know, it used to be that as Christians, we were the moral majority. Today, I would say, as Glyn Harrison has said in his book, another one that is fabulous, Glyn Harrison has said, we've moved from being the moral majority to the immoral minority. There's less of us, but actually what we have to share today with society is quite often seen as immoral and, further than that, harmful. You see, the culture is weaving, there are silk threads being created and presented. It first of all tells us in culture that all truth is relative. There is no right way to understand the world or ourselves. No one has authority to tell anyone else how to live. As Francis Schaeffer says, we should note this curious mark of our own age. The only absolute allowed is the absolute insistence that there is no absolute. Do you recognise that? Do you see that that is where we have come to? And certainly for those of you still at school, I imagine that is absolutely, there's no absolute. You can believe what you believe, I can believe what I believe, and we are tickety-boo. Ravi Zacharias says that we have today a generation that is growing up who hears with their eyes and thinks with their feelings. It's all about how we feel. Our culture and its messages are having a huge impact on how we understand many things, including our sexuality. But this is not new. It has always been this way. Culture has always shaped the views and responses to this. And this morning, I want to challenge us. I want us to get our heads around God's instruction manual. And do you know what I want us to start doing? I want us to start building a really big boat. I want us to consider our counter-cultural response to what we are seeing, to what we are hearing, and to what we are being fed. Because here we have culture saying, your identity can be totally fluid. Totally fluid. Identities can be deconstructed and reconstructed. And you know what? You find your authentic self, that it can constantly be in flux. It can constantly be changing. That's the cultural weave. But I want us to build the fact that we can have a secure identity. It is impossible to know ourselves outside of our Creator. The countercultural message is He has created us. He is our Creator. And we are made in His image, male and female. He created us. And then we have the weave that is self-created. You know, human value is earned and determined by culture. The truth about ourselves is found by looking inside ourselves. It's all about me. It's all about us. It is self-created. That's the weave. But I want us to build the fact that we are made in the image of God, that we are endowed with inestimable value, that we should be treated and can be treated, and we want to treat one another at every stage of life with dignity and respect. And that the image of God, yes, it definitely has been distorted by sin, but it is not lost. The image of God is still in us and those around us. Let's build that. Where culture is weaving individualism, the individual rights, my rights, trump everything. We're seeing that so completely and overtly, particularly in the abortion conversations and potential law that are coming in. My rights, that is what matters as a woman. That is what matters the most, over and above everything else. We're the only species that are killing our offspring. Don't get me started. Individual rights trump everything, including our responsibility for our children and for our community. Whereas we've been created for relationship. It's not all about me. It's not all about I. We're created for relationship. We're relational beings, and we can only know ourselves in relation to God and to others. Culture is weaving that a commodity, that everything is a commodity, that we acquire, we consume, and then we move on. And even from relationships, that relationships are disposable as long as they last and as long as they are useful and as long as they are important to me and self-serving me. Whereas what we want to build is a covenant relationship, relationships that are defined by a faithful presence and commitment to each other. And this is particularly exemplified in marriage. Culture is weaving a dualistic approach, the body, mind, and spirit, or the body, mind split. My body, my mind, they're distinct and they're separate. What I think and what you see can be two totally different things. What I think is who I am. We want to build a holistic view, and we want to say that we are whole people. What I do with my body, it impacts my mind, but also my emotions and also my spirit. We want to build that in society today. And lastly, culture is weaving self-pleasure. The ultimate good of sex is for pleasure. That's it. Whereas we want to build that, yes, sexual intimacy is good, it is for marriage, and meaningful intimacy can be found outside of sexual intimacy in friendship. With all my heart, I want us to be known for what we are for what we are building. I want us to think this morning not only about what we're against, because there's a time and a place for us to know that, but I want us to be a people who are for these things, who are for relationship, who are for covenant, that we're for being made in the image of God, that we're for these things. You know, in the story of our emperor's new clothes, it was a child who spoke out. It was a child who said, hold on a wee minute here. He might not have said that exactly. Hold on, the emperor is naked. Do you know, we more than ever need people who are going to say, hold on a minute here. What are we teaching? What are we saying? What are we doing? I wonder how God is challenging you this morning. Because if we say nothing, nothing's going to change. Do you know, all it takes for evil to prosper is for good men and women to say and do nothing. I wonder if for too long we have indeed stayed silent. And I want to encourage us all to speak out where we can. No one else is going to share God's message for us. If we as Christians aren't doing this, nobody else is going to do it for us. We need to be people of courage who will absolutely appear deluded in today's society, and we need to be people who are going to speak out. We need to have compassion and grace as we do so, but we can't not do this. In our story of Noah, God encouraged him not only to build a boat, but to bring others on board. He wasn't to do it alone. And I want us to look around and see that we don't need to be on our own. There's sometimes as we speak out, we can feel really isolated and really vulnerable. But how amazing would it be to know that others are standing with us? In this community, how are you standing with each other as you speak out? In God's rescue story for humanity, Noah wasn't alone. Let's not try and do this on our own. And so we want to acknowledge that culture is indeed weaving a very attractive story. But will you be people who speak out? And where you can't speak out, where you can't get into those places, will you stand with those who are? We've heard this afternoon that there's a prayer meeting to pray into the whole legislation change around abortion. Organisations like Both Lives Matter are doing an incredible job of going where we can't and saying what we can't at times into society. Will you stand with groups like that as they take a stand? As a church, you're standing with us as an organisation, and we are so thankful for that. We are so thankful for the support that we receive here from you as a church. We are going places where not everybody can go. We're getting into schools, we're speaking to young people, we're delivering programmes that not everybody can do, and you're standing with us. But perhaps this morning you might consider standing with us personally. There's a wee QR code here that will come up at the end as well, and you can scan that and it'll take you to further information and ways to keep in touch with us. But perhaps you would consider standing with us as a financial guardian. As somebody who's going to say, do you know, you can get into schools, I can't, and I want to financially stand with you and become a guardian. And we've got some information at the back. You know, this isn't just a financial ask, it's more than that. It's about you protecting, watching over, and allowing us to continue to have the space that we have while we can continue to build the boat in schools today. And in everything, as we finish, will you be people who build? Will you be people who follow God's instruction manual to the letter? With precision, and with commitments, and with compassion, and dare I say it, with an enormous amount of passion, will you be people who throw yourself at building this boat? When others think you're deluded, as they absolutely will, can I remind you that you're in good company? We read in Hebrews 11 that by faith Noah built a ship in the middle of dry land. He was warned about something he couldn't see, and he acted on what he was told. The result, his family were saved. His act of faith drew a sharp line between the evil and the unbelieving world and the rightness of the believing world. And as a result, Noah became intimate with God. What's the line today? Where are we building? So where are you building in your family? What are you building there? What are the messages that you're communicating in your family? What opportunities are you creating to have those conversations with your kids, with your grandchildren, with your friends, with your nieces and nephews, with your friends in school? What conversations are you having? Let's be people who build in our friends and family circles. Let's be people who build these conversations in really naturally. It's never too late. And it's never too early to start having those conversations. In your schools with your friends, in your schools as parents, what can you do to influence? What can you do to build in those settings? Our schools are under immense pressure. Teachers are under incredible pressure. But they do have a choice in who they bring into their schools to deliver some of these subjects. Will you continue to influence that space to ensure that it's a good message, a value-based message, that Love for Life are still in our schools and able to present there? And as you work in the communities where you find yourselves, will you live by example? Will you build and show love in those settings? We are led in culture today to believe that to show love to someone, we need to not only love them, but we need to accept everything about them, their beliefs, their attitudes, their behaviours. That's how I show love to the person. But this is not the case. We are called to love, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to accept everything you believe or everything you do, but I can love you. As people look on and think we're crazy, out of touch with reality, will you be people who continue to build what God has asked his church to build? In church, what will we do? What will we say? How will we open these conversations up in such a way that brings clarity and compassion and grace that allows people to come and say, help, as we navigate through these very challenging times? Do you know, as we conclude, I love the part in the story where God says, never again. I will establish my covenant with you, and never again will all life be destroyed. This is a sign of my covenant with you, a covenant for all generations to come. That includes us. I have set my rainbow in the clouds. This rainbow, it will be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. I don't think it's any coincidence it's a rainbow. And I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. God's promise is indeed for all generations. It's for us today. Will you be builders? Will you be as Noah was? Will you find favour in the eyes of our Lord? Will you be righteous and blameless among the people of your time, of our time? And will you walk faithfully with God in the days to come? Thank you.